Hey everybody, John Fusco here again, kicking off what I think turned out to be, among other things, a really fascinating discussion on how directors can work with young actors to produce brilliant performances. This week on the No Film School podcast, we have director J.A. Bayona, screenwriter Patrick Ness, and 14-year-old Louis McDougall, the leading man of A Monster Calls. The movie, which hits New York and Los Angeles on December 23rd, is a standout from your typical feel-good holiday story. It follows a child as he slips further and further into a fantastical relationship with a tree monster in an attempt to cope with the impending death of his mother. For actor, screenwriter, and director, the film's heavy themes provided many a challenge. How emotionally intense should a screenwriter make a 12-year-old role? How does a director encourage a young actor to reach deep into their emotional depths? What does it take for the actor to get there? It took the efforts of all three to pull the final product off, and I really think you're going to enjoy listening to how they did it. First, I'll ask you guys to introduce yourself so the listeners can get acquainted with your voices, starting with you, J.A.
Hi, I'm J.A. Bayona, director for Monster Calls.
Hi, I'm Louis McDougall, and I play Connor in Monster Calls.
I'm Patrick Ness. I wrote the book and the screenplay.
Great.
For Monster Calls, in fact. So it's a good thing we're all here together.
Yeah, I'm glad I got you all in this room together because now we can talk a little bit about your collaboration. I mean, you guys are, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as many filmmakers are concerned, the three of the most important aspects of filmmaking. We have the lead actor, the director, and the screenwriter who actually adapted the film from a novel that he wrote. So I suppose I'll start off by asking, how was that process of adapting your novel for the film? And I know, J.A., you had a part in this too. So we'll start with Patrick.
It was a slightly backwards way to go around it. Which was, I'd written the book and I'd written it based on the idea from Siobhan Dowd, who was another writer who died, so an unusual way to write a novel in the first place. But I was having meetings about the book potentially turning into a film, which are always, you know, they're always nice, you know, but I mean, I didn't get any sort of success until I was in my late 30s, and so I have a pretty realistic view of, you know, what can happen. And so I always take it with a nice grain of salt. It's enjoyable. But I never take it all that seriously. But in these meetings, they were mostly really positive. People, you know, really responding well. One or two people suggested some changes. And of course, things need to be changed for a movie, but they were changes to soften it. And I felt that that was a betrayal to the truth of the material, which sounds very noble, possibly noble / naive looking back. But so I thought, well, I'll write the script myself. And at least I can start the conversation and say, here is my argument for why I believe what I believe about the material. And that's a philosophy I have, which I always say when I talk to wannabe writers. I say, I don't think real writers write. Real writers write anyway. And, you know, I come from a small town where nobody wrote books. I wrote one anyway. There's no reason why anybody would want my script for this book. I wrote it anyway. So I think it's the anyway bit, that the bloody-mindedness that sort of made it all come together.
You have to be stubborn and you have to have the vision and you have to go through with it.
Yep.
After you wrote the book, did you immediately have designs to make it into a movie? What was that sort of, where did that idea come from? Because it is a very visual film.
Yeah, I suppose not immediately, but, you know, like I said, people were responding to it and I talked to some people, talked to some directors and some producers and it was more, well, this could possibly be, but again, I would, you know, I'd rather it not be made than made badly, because I felt, particularly this book, because I was, you know, custodian of another writer's idea as well as my own, I thought I want to be protective of it. And so it's more that. It's more that, just, well, why not, if we're going to make it, why not at least try to do it the way I'd want to do it?
And you didn't have any screenwriting experience beforehand?
Oh, no, I noodled around a bit. But it's another thing about writing. I think the only person who should tell a writer what to write is the writer themselves. And that is age group, genre, medium. Give it a try. You know, it's storytelling. You have to learn things. You can't be arrogant about it. You know, but like I said, I'd done some noodling around with screenplays, but I felt like by the time I got to this, I had learned plenty and I was willing to learn more. And and why not? Plunge in. You only live once.
Mm-hmm. So, J.A., when did you get involved in the process of adapting this story? Because I know the script stood out to you.
Well, I read the book first and then I read the script. I met Patrick the first time we met, I really love the source material. I love the book, and I wanted to be involved from the very first reading. I came with some ideas because I didn't want to soften the story, but I wanted to have, like, to find some light at the end of the story. And somehow Patrick loved what I bring over the table, and we started to work together. I consider the film very faithful to the book and to the script that Patrick did, but I tried to put also my own in the story, the same way Patrick put his own persona in adapting someone else's idea, you know. But we came well. We came together very well, and I think so, right?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, it's the great thing about working with Bayona and his producer Belén Atienza is the for them, and I really love this, and I've tried to keep it in continuing work. Is an idea doesn't have an ego. An idea is good or bad. Doesn't matter where it came from. You know, you take the idea, you test it. If it doesn't work, you set it aside, you move on. And that's a very freeing way to work, because it means you can be really creative. And if it doesn't work, who cares? We've got more coming. And it was a compliment, for one thing. It was very, very welcoming. But it also was so exciting to work with the material, because you get everybody's best.
Mm-hmm. So then this is something that I'm just personally interested in. Because fairy tale and folklore has such an integral part in the film, how do you think that medium or that art form, that storytelling form, is structurally sort of relevant for film nowadays? Fairy tale or folklore, like, how does it enhance film?
I think it's not just for film. I think in general, fairy tales, they are a very important part in the world of kids. I think somehow through fairy tales, kids are able to process complex ideas and emotions that they go through every day. So I think in general, fantasy is a very important role in the education of every kid. I think somehow through fantasy, they can understand reality in a more accessible way. I think there's no learning in reality. This is why we read books or why we do movies, because we want to learn about ourselves. And I think in that sense, fantasy give us a knowledge that reality is not able to give us, or knowledge, or just a sense, a meaning to what is life.
And for you, Patrick, I mean, since you wrote the source material and it is sort of, you had to craft these fairy tales, what struck you about fairy tale as a medium to sort of convey the child's struggle with grief?
Siobhan had the idea that this monster would tell stories, but she didn't say what those stories would be. And she was so excited about the stories, but she didn't write them down. But I thought it was such a great idea, and also how often you get a chance to make up a fairy tale.
Yeah.
So, but part of it is fairy tales have as Bono was saying, a very important function, particularly for young people. But a story has an interesting limitation, you know, in that it ends. And I was always interested in it as a kid, is what happened to the story after the ending. Always, 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 always. And that, in a way, is what A Monster Calls is about. It's thematically, it is about how do you keep on living after the worst thing happens? And so as ways to get there is to take a fairy tale. And another reason a fairy tale is such a potent storytelling device is we all think we know it. We think we know what's going to happen. We know the rules of a fairy tale. And so to write that, and then to keep going, to say after the end, then these other things happen, changing the way you look at the fairy tale. That is a great way to subvert it, and to say that if the witch tells her own version of Hansel and Gretel, it's a very different story. And that's really interesting. And it allows Connor, our protagonist, to look at his own story and say, maybe there's another way to tell it. Maybe a way that I can live with that isn't quite so destructive as the story I'm telling now. So there's lots of functions there, and it's lots about what the medium of a story within a story does.
Absolutely. So let's get to Connor. Let's get to Lewis. What was the casting process like for UJA? Did you have a hand in that, Patrick and Lewis?
Well, it started when I was asked to audition to go to London to do an audition. And well, then I got asked to do a second audition where I got to meet JA, and that was, you know, I think in that one we did, at the end of the audition, we did one of the more emotional scenes. that was probably my first taster of what, you know, really what it was going to be like to shoot the film. And then I got asked to do a screen test in Barcelona, which was good fun, but also a bit, you know, intimidating as well, because I mean, I'd never, like, apart from Pan, I'd never really done something like that, like of that like that before, because we're doing one of the scenes of the monster, so it was a lot of, you know, shouting. And it was my first time really getting to that place, and it was also a bit intimidating because the other boys who were going for the same role were there, but yeah, it all turned out.
Were they in the same room with you there?
I got on quite well with them.
Sure.
So it was fine. But, you know, then again, there's also the bit that you're all going for the same thing.
So then acting, I mean, in the film, you just said, you know, you had that prior experience in Pan, but that was about it. How do you push yourself to that, to sort of lead role with such emotional weight to it? What was that like for you?
I mean, that was definitely the hardest part about doing the film, was the fact that, you know, a lot, Connor, throughout the film, you know, encounters a lot of, like, a variety of different emotions, you know, like lots of different emotions, and getting in touch with that was definitely the hardest part. I guess I look at, you know, experiences that I've had in my own life to try and help me, you know, understand what he's going through. But I also think that, you know, especially in the scenes with the monster, when you're given the freedom to just shout and scream and just let loose and do whatever you want, like, a lot of the other emotions come, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Totally.
It's in terms of, you know, talking about making for the filmmakers listening, one of the screenplay challenges was how to pitch the character of Connor, because we're essentially asking a 12-year-old actor to carry the entire film, and it's an extremely emotional film, and he's got to go on a very long journey to, you know, through some really tough stuff to get to this point of release. And there was lengthy consideration for me. How much do I ask for? How much, as a writer, do I ask this theoretical actor to do? And how is that going to be possible? And it was a good experience, because in the end I thought, I might as well ask for the moon, because it is easier, if we need to, it's easier to pull back a little. But you never know. You might get a kid who can do all of this incredible stuff. And we were very, very, very lucky that Lewis could. But, you know, if we hadn't asked, we might not have gotten. And so that's advice I'd get. Always ask for the moon. You might not hit the moon, but you might get something really interesting on the way.
So then during the audition process, how did you ask for the moon? J.A., do you want to answer that? How did you know what, when you saw Lewis, or what were you looking to identify in a young actor to try and bring him into this world and onto this role?
It was the fact that Lewis was so different from the other kids, because we had a good bunch of kids at the end. In the last audition, we have 4 or 5 kids, and they were all very good. But Lewis was different from the other ones. The other ones were playing the scene, going more to the more predictable emotional stuff that you will expect, you know? But Lewis was more about rage, more reluctant to cry. And I think that the tears that he showed in that test were tears that he didn't want to show. That was so unique, so special, that I knew that that he was going to be someone that will bring something unique to the character, not just a good performance, because we have very good actors at the end, but something unique that the other kids were not able to bring on the table.
So for aspiring filmmakers, you know, it's very hard for low budget or independent filmmakers to find young actors with such talent. Could you give some advice as to how to do that? I guess if you don't have a lot of resources behind you.
I don't understand why it's more difficult if you have low budget than...
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I think in general, it's probably very hard to find young actors.
I think it's a question of, with kids, it's a question of energy. If they're very young, it's a question of patience. I mean, it's not the case of Lewis, because he was 12 when we were shooting. But if you're shooting with a 7-year-old boy, you need to have a lot of patience, you know. But with kids, it's a question of energy. And in general, acting is a question of energy. You just try to put as much energy in working with the actors, and they love that. They love a director who loves to work with them and create a character. I've met so many actors in my life that they tell you that they don't work with the director. They are not directed, you know. So actors, they love to be directed, you know, and it's a question of putting energy and try to feed them, to nurture them, to create the environment. It's not a question of telling much about the character or telling them what they need to think about. I mean, that's part of their business, you know. Right, you don't get into the private life of the actors, but you try to create the environment and spend the time that they deserve.
Well, you were blessed with such a talented young actor. Were there any extreme challenges, would you say, or challenges that you two faced in filmmaking together?
Well, we had to create chemistry between Luis and a character that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I mean, we didn't have the monster, of course, in the set. We have a life-size replica, so Luis was able to perform in front of something. And Luis also did all the motion capture with Liam Neeson, so for him was a great rehearsal. But then you need to create chemistry, and chemistry is such a difficult thing to get. I think that, for example, in the case of the mother and Connor, we spent a lot of time together with Luis and Felicity. They spent a lot of time together, but in creating the monster, they couldn't spend a lot of time together. So you need to find a way of creating that chemistry that you can see on the screen with a character that doesn't exist.
And Luis, for you, how was that working with a CGI character, I guess, as opposed to a real, because that would be the mm-hmm. most challenging part.
Yeah. I mean, obviously when you're with a real person in front of you, you can, you know, you can bounce things off each other and react to each other. So a lot of the time it'd either be sometimes a recording of Liam, but most of the time it was the acting coach or sometimes even Jay reading the monster's lines. But I suppose, you know, the fact that, I mean, the replica they made, it was truly phenomenal. It was phenomenal. I mean, they made the hands as well and even the feet of the monster. So having that there was you know, extremely helpful. It really did allow me to imagine and sort of visualize what this monster was going to be like.
I'll just end by asking each of you, because this is something that we like to do on every podcast, any advice you have for JA, we're going to do filmmakers. For Luis, we're going to do young actors. And for Patrick, we're going to do screenwriters, all emerging in their field. So we'll start with you, Patrick.
I said a little bit of it before, but like I said, I think real writers don't write, they write anyway. And to have I also think anyone can start a script, but only real writers finish one. And I think that's also really important. And in the book world, I found my agent because I wrote an entire book and I made it the best goddamn book I possibly could. And then she took me on as a client and she got it published, and it was as impossible and easy as that, if you see what I mean. And yeah, the same with the script. I wrote the script of Monster Calls on spec. I made it as good as I possibly could. And then I had a sample in a way, which I didn't actually even expect, because it then went on the blacklist, which I hadn't even heard of. And I got a bunch of other work offers, which was unexpected, but nice. But it was because I had a piece of work that I was really proud of. And maybe that piece of work never gets made, but it shows people what your voice is and what you can do. So that, I suppose that's what I would say. Get a really good piece of work, and that's gonna send you places.
And I guess bring it with you wherever you go.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, like, I suggested this to a friend of mine, and because he wanted to work in television, and he said, okay, there's a pilot idea I want to write. So he wrote a pilot idea purely to say to producers, could I get some feedback on this? And someone actually bought the pilot. So, I mean, it can happen. This isn't anybody wildly famous. It's just somebody who wrote a good pilot and somebody liked it. So genuinely write a good sample.
And that's very true about real writers being the ones who finish it versus the ones who start it. So how about you, Luis? For any young actors trying to break out onto the scene, what would you say is important for them to keep in mind, I'd say?
I think, well, something that's, you know, probably really important for a young actor is really to, I mean, firstly, like I've been going to like a drama group since I was like, since like 9 or 10, and that really wasn't, I never thought, oh, I'm gonna be an actor. In fact, you know, I never actually had that thought at all. It was really just a fun thing, and I think that's quite important. You have to enjoy it, and it has to be a fun thing before it becomes a serious one, if you know what I mean. And if, you know, if you do get the opportunity to do a film and stuff like that, I think working with adults is really, you know, people who have experience is really, you know, really beneficial. Not that anything's wrong with working with other kids, but, you know, getting the opportunity to work with adults is really, or even just talk to adults who are actors is really helpful, because, you know, they've they have experience.
Yeah. So I guess listening is just such an important part of acting in
exactly,
general.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Totally. And JA, how about you? For any emerging filmmakers that are trying to make a film, I say, as imaginatively as you've done here.
I think, according to my experience, that doing a film is such a hard thing to do. So difficult that it doesn't matter what anyone will tell you. You really need to want to do it. I mean, it's just a question of how. I mean, don't do it if you have doubts. Don't do it because if you have doubts, maybe you're not the one. I think you really need to be convinced about the fact that this is what you want to do. This is your life. For me, it's difficult to separate my life from my job. I think everything is the same. So in that sense, I remember that when I remember I went to a film school and then I was teaching and I was telling the students, listen, it's all about what you learn. Everybody's saying whatever they want to say about the work, but you just need to follow your instinct and do it.
I guess I'd follow up with that with, because you just said you went to film school.
Yeah, I said that, and this is no film school.
I didn't go to film school. It's fine. Great. It'll be fine.
I would say in learning, what are some things that people who didn't go to film school, how can they accelerate their learning outside of film school to sort of put themselves in a place to succeed?
I think shooting is a film school. You don't need to go to a film school to learn about shooting, you know. I think for me, what was good about being in a film school is that we shot a lot of stuff. We were shooting all day long. I mean, it's like nonstop. So much that there was a moment that we were complaining because we didn't have time to anything else, you know. So that was very good. I mean, it's good to be at class and it's good to spend a lot of time in the bar with your friends talking about movies, and it's good to spend a lot of time shooting. I mean, but you can do that also out of the film school. It's a question of just try to find a camera and try to find a good story and engage the people in helping you in putting that on the screen.
Yeah, that's so important, finding the right collaborators. And you guys seem to have found each other, and the movie was awesome, A Monster Calls. When does it come out? Comes out next week?
December 23rd.
December 23rd?
In New York and LA, and then wide on the 6th of January.
Perfect. So people will probably be listening to this on Christmas time. Excellent. So
perfect movie for Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks again, everyone, for listening today. And thanks to Patrick, JA, and Lewis for sitting down with me. The movie is A Monster Calls, and you can see it starting December 23rd. I was John Fusco, and you can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. Be sure to listen to our last Indie Film Weekly episode of this horrible 2016 on Thursday. And if you haven't already, rate and subscribe to the No Film School podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever your favorite podcast platform happens to be. Good night.